This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another sterling edition of Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward, joined as always by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, red-cockaded woodpeckers.
We have spent the last week since we were last with you rounding up our latest target list, and boy, are we taking aim once again very enthusiastically, and let's get right into it because, boy, do we have a lot going on, as usual. Well, it had to happen eventually. We knew that if North Carolina's citizens were stupid enough to vote for Josh Stein as governor of this state, that the day would come, one fine day in March, when he would be delivering the State of the State address to the awaiting and adoring masses, such as they are. And that did, in fact, occur this past week on Wednesday evening up in Raleigh. And we heard from the governor, and I have to say that in contrast to Donald Trump's speech the previous week, everyone in the chamber, Democrats and Republicans alike, were very civil.
Wait, were the Democrats holding up little paddles to object to everything that Governor Stein said?
No,
no paddles.
No, everybody. It was like a church choir in there.
Were the female Democrats all dressed in solidarity in some wacky color?
No, everyone seemed to be quite well behaved, and that's that's a good thing, I think.
Wait. So let me see if I got this right. So there was a Democrat given a state of the state address, and the Republicans were well behaved. The Republicans weren't holding up signs or catcalls or getting kicked out.
I didn't see any evidence of that. In fact, and we're going to have a word with this guy. One of the Republican members of the legislature gave the governor a hug, which I think we should definitely discourage that going forward. We don't want a lot of hugging of Democratic governors.
I'm just contrasting the rabble that's the Democrat Party with the actual decent and proper decorum Republicans.
It's quite stark between the civility of normal people and the incivility of deranged lefties.
Look at who's throwing Molotov cocktails and, burning down Tesla dealerships.
Precisely. But what came to light in Josh Stein's speech, which, of course, he immediately turned attention to the recovery efforts in Western North Carolina in the aftermath of the flooding of late September 2024. But what struck me was how Stein talked about the ongoing recovery efforts as if they needed to begin right away and under his new leadership.
We're going to get right on that.
And how we need to get that money to the people out there as quickly as possible, as if the last 5 months didn't exist, as if somehow the dire needs of the people of Western North Carolina had not existed prior to his speech on Wednesday night. Let's go to clip one.
Folks, we're talking about $60 billion in overall damages. By far the costliest storm to ever hit our state. That is too much for those affected to bear themselves. They need our help. People need to get back in their homes. Roads and bridges need to be fixed. Businesses need to keep their doors open and their employees hired. Our communities need clean drinking water. That's why I'm working with President Trump and his cabinet and our congressional delegation to seek billions more in federal funds, ASAP. That's why I urge you to pass the $500 million Western North Carolina recovery bill. We need that money now. Heck, we needed it yesterday. Ashley and Freddie, Matt and Michelle, all of Western North Carolina, they need us to do our jobs. So let's do it. Let's pass that bill. And when you do, I am ready to sign it.
Well, they need us now. Yes, they do. But they needed us, 5 months ago, 4 months ago, 3 months ago. And well, were it not for the tireless efforts of volunteers,
correct,
many of whom we will never know their names or what they've done, but they've been,
yes,
there in the trenches doing the good work.
Yes.
Were it not for those people, the failure of the state response, not to mention the failed federal response by FEMA, would have been even much more glaring. In fact, it took the Washington Post, of all publications, in an effort to do a fairly lengthy piece of reporting on the status of life in Western North Carolina, which I have to say, it's the Washington Post, but it was a fairly thoroughly reported piece, quite lengthy. But in the piece, the Post reveals something that I don't know anyone had ever thought about before. And here's what the Post reported. Another potential obstacle in the recovery was that North Carolina never appointed a disaster recovery coordinator to take charge of communicating with federal agencies, which is what FEMA recommends. They talked to an emergency management expert who said she was shocked that the state did not appoint a disaster response czar. If FEMA was guilty of anything, the state of North Carolina is equally guilty of it, she said. Now, the Post never mentions that the person who failed to appoint the disaster recovery coordinator was then-Governor Roy Cooper.
Yeah,
he's not mentioned by name.
Right.
And the Post goes on to say that it wasn't until early January that newly elected Governor Josh Stein appointed a leadership team to oversee the recovery in North Carolina. Well, that, of course, is because Donald Trump said, my first trip as the 47th president is going to be to Western North Carolina, which thereby forced Stein and the Democrats in North Carolina
something.
To get their act together,
yeah,
so they'd have something to say for the photo ops and the press conferences when Trump came to town.
So, okay, first of all, to Josh Stein's credit, he did say this assistance was needed yesterday.
Yes.
So at least he said yesterday.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
So, but look, here's the point. First of all Governor Cooper cared about, he was like Biden, all Cooper cared about was implementing his leftist agenda and radicalizing North Carolina. I mean, look at our DMVs. Every administrative function under Cooper fell apart. You can't even, I mean, DMVs are closed. The state's rambled wreckage. He did not care about the people of Western North Carolina. Under Biden, the FEMA response was at best tepid. If non-existent, it's probably closer. The state response was non. I mean, they didn't even appoint someone to coordinate. And the National Guard did almost nothing, and that's unfortunate because the National Guard has an amazing. But this is what happens when you elect a governor who literally's focus is just on radicalizing stuff, not improving services to the people. But let's not let Josh Stein off the hook. Josh Stein was the attorney general, and the attorney general was not powerless to make sure that FEMA response happened. But both of them are just radical Democrats who care about, transgender, rights and all this bizarre, having drag queens story hours in our schools. That's their priority.
Yeah, it is. It's remarkable.
It's sad.
They really don't know how to respond to a tragic situation like the flooding,
right,
in Western North Carolina, because A, they don't understand what that kind of devastation is like, having not experienced it themselves, and they really have no connection to the people that it affects.
Yeah, they really could not have cared less.
They don't really understand what the big deal is if somebody has to live in a donated trailer for 6 months as opposed to having the prospect of actually returning to a home that's either been repaired or rebuilt. In fact, it came to light in the past week that really, to this point in time, they have no idea in terms of coordination how many homes need to be rebuilt, whether they can be rebuilt, and when the rebuilding process will begin. And already legislators are sending up the warning flags that this could be a repeat of the Hurricane Matthew and Florence situation, which still, after nearly a decade, you have people whose homes and lives have not been restored from those events of nearly a decade ago, those hurricanes. So here we go again. Let's move a little closer to home to a potential for very undesirable outcomes for our citizens in northern Moore County. Many of you may have, like myself, only recently started focusing on what's going on with the Deep River and a dam called the High Falls Dam that has been in existence. Gosh, I think it goes back to literally the 1700s when there was a natural waterfall of sorts in the area. Later, a dam was built to power a mill in the mid 1800s, I believe. And that's all just a little quick background. But let's fast forward to today, where we've discovered our crack research team. But although the citizens of Northern Moore and High Falls have known for a decade that yes. this dam was in the crosshairs of these environmentalists.
Yes, the environmentalist wacko industrial complex is trying to remove our beloved dam.
So where we are now is that a very well-funded organization called American Rivers
Inc.
has effectively taken ownership of this dam and is threatening to shut it down without any regard for how that would affect the river, how it would affect the citizens who rely entirely on well water to live, to provide water to their homes.
Fire safety.
But they do know, the American Rivers people do know, that by removing the dam, they can potentially save the life of an endangered fish species called the shiner, which is essentially, ladies and gentlemen, a minnow.
A minnow. We used to use shiners as bait. Do they know that most people use shiners for fish bait?
Well, apparently they don't care.
So
one man's bait is another man's endangered species.
Let me expound on this a bit, because yes, Steve, the people of Northern Moore have been tracking this closely, and here's what's happened: these radical environmentalist group, they play the long game, and they've been working on this for a decade. So a decade or so ago, an LLC bought the property that the dam is on, right? And then 8 years ago, they tried to destroy it, and the community came up in an uproar, right? And you can't do that. And then they backed down. But everyone thought the issue went away. But no, for 8 years, they've been laying the groundwork, the legal groundwork, doing this, doing that. Then, under the Biden administration, and this is what our crack research team found, under the Biden administration, this America Rivers Inc., whose job, their mission, they want to remove 30,000 dams nationwide. And most of their work so far has been in the western part of the country. California, you know, right? Pacific Palisades, Washington State. They're tearing down hydroelectric dams, right? On the, like, functioning hydroelectric dams. Well, so one of their stated things was to remove all the dams along the Yadkin River. I think anyway, the Deep River is one of their, they're marching up the Deep River and they're removing all the dams that flow downrange, right? And the Biden administration is giving them tens of millions of dollars to do this. So they're getting, Well, the bottom line is they got tens of millions of dollars of grants, and they got a $4 or $5 million grant specifically to remove dams along the Deep River. So you've got this federally funded wacko environmental group who's using federal funding to come down to the local level and remove a dam against the will of the people. That dam, the water impounded, it provides water for the fire department. There's no fire hydrants up there. When the volunteer firefighters are fighting a fire, they go to a pond or they go to a lake and refill their truck and they shuttle it back and forth. Well, that dam provides, that water impounded by that dam provides important firefighting protection for Northern Moore. It's also a future water source for all of Moore County. It also has been there so long, it's raised the water table so that the surrounding farms and houses, the wells, right? They tear down that dam. Northern Moore is going to lose fire protection. All of Moore County is going to lose a potential drinking water source. people's wells are going to go dry. Who's going to pay for that? And then, oddly enough, that dam has a hydroelectric generator permit issued by the U.S. Department of Energy. That's valuable. You know, what needs to happen is eminent domain is there to condemn property that serves a public purpose, right? Like if you own a house in the middle of an interstate, you know, like they're widening 211 or corporate headquarters, they took a, you know, half an acre of my land and here's your check, right? The county ought to declare eminent domain on that dam because it does. It's important for public safety, for fire. It's a future use of water. You know, the cost of you know, if wells go dry. And more importantly, we could put a generator on that dam and Moore County could have a source of clean, environmentally friendly electricity in perpetuity. We could sell power to Duke Energy. So I think that we ought to turn the tables on the leftists and we ought to declare eminent domain over that dam and just take it from American Rivers.
And you're probably wondering, how does an entity like American Rivers, you know, make such headway in pursuing its objectives and its goals? Well, here's how they do it. They do it by sounding really benign and really like they're your best friend and have only the interests of the whole country in mind. Play clip two.
Together, we can achieve remarkable results. Now, we're at a time at which our politics are particularly polarized. And it's my hope that a universal value like clean water can bridge the divides of this country. Whether you're a farmer or a rancher, or a business person, or a family member, or a community, or an angler, we all need and value clean water. I hope you will join with us in taking action for America's most endangered rivers. And I hope you will speak up for stronger protections of these rivers, whether it's strengthening the laws at the state level or calling on Congress to strengthen the federal Clean Water Act.
So it sounds to me like they're concerned about losing funding during these troubling times.
Yeah, polarized, yes.
Yes, these polarizing times, but more importantly, it's not about clean water. First of all, those dams provide flood protection. They don't mention that. Let's tear down these dams so we can be Pacific Palisades. So then when Northern Moore catches on fire, there's no water to put out the fire. Yeah. See, they don't talk about the downsides and the effects that that their actions, that they're using our federal tax money has on these communities. I mean, my God, the community of High Falls is named after the dam.
Exactly.
I say we declare eminent domain on this dam and we take it from the leftists and we build a big, beautiful recreational lake there. We put public access on it and we have people out rowing their boats. We have fire to fight. We have water to fight our fires. We have water to sustain our community. We have a dam to generate hydroelectricity and everything's perfect. Just go away.
Yeah, and we don't have a clean water issue.
Right.
In the deep river.
Floods would create, I mean, how does a dam create dirty water? Explain that to me.
We're obviously not qualified, David.
Yeah,
we're
apparently. Not. I mean, we need a Supreme Court justice that can't define a female to tell us,
exactly.
Why, anyway.
So to quickly recap, our public enemy number one this week is the collective incompetence of former Governor Roy Cooper and sitting Governor Josh Stein,
right,
who have abandoned the people largely of Western North Carolina and will probably continue to do so. And then our runner-up, we always have one, is American Rivers and their dastardly scheme to shut down the High Falls Dam and do irreparable damage potentially to the citizens of the community to save a minnow.
And I call on the Moore County GOP to stand in solidarity with the good people of Northern Moore and pass a resolution demanding a stop to this federal funding and this federal overreach of these wacko environmentalist groups. That funding needs to go away immediately.
And there will be a Moore County Republican Party convention coming up on March 22nd, which is a week from today. Believe it or not. Let us move on to some of the enticing and potentially really annoying stories you may have missed in the past week. As usual, we had to cull the list down considerably from the original list.
Yes, we start off with like a 200-page spreadsheet to like two or three things.
We have to keep reminding ourselves that this is a one-hour program and act accordingly. Well, wouldn't you know it? It was inevitable that you've seen the exploding heads of the left as the Department of Government Efficiency has gone about the task of exposing the waste, fraud, and abuse that is that has infested the federal government for decades now, and DOGE, as it is called, led by Elon Musk, a great patriot of our time. They are systematically not only exposing the billions of dollars being frittered away and in some cases laundered back to corrupt politicians, but they are recommending specific areas where programs and positions and even departments are to be cut. This, of course, has inflamed lefties all across the fruited plain. A few of them gathered in downtown Raleigh earlier this week. As usual, it was a very small turnout of people who have nothing better to do but to rant and rave about the threat to their rights posed by Trump and the idea that we bring efficiency to the federal and by extension state governments. Let's play clip three.
Today it's the Department of Education. Next week it might be Social Security. It might be Medicare. I'm on Medicare. You know, I'm concerned because I'm really mad. And there's not a lot that you can do about it except this.
Or you can just, you know, go back to work and get on with your life. And by the way, why is there, we did see the wonderful news in the past week of massive job cuts at the Department of Education, cutting its workforce essentially in half, which is long overdue. Given that it has no...
Those job cuts were delayed because the Department of Education had a difficulty trying to compute what half of 4,200 employees was.
Yes, they had to bring
They had
in
to hire a consultant.
Yes,
they had
to
hire, yes.
To run the, to
they
crunch
to
the numbers.
Issue
yeah.
a contract and bring in a consultant.
But it's interesting how this loon, who we just heard from in downtown Raleigh, makes the leap from, okay, we're going to cut an inefficient department that has had no... material effect on the quality of education. In fact, you could argue that it has diminished the strength of the American educational complex over the decades. But she makes the leap that is going to then, you know, automatically lead to cuts in Social Security, in Medicare, and Medicaid. She's just repeating the talking points that she hears on CNN and MSNBC.
Yeah, the clapping seal.
And then so they're gathering to demand that the bloat continues unabated, and thank God that we are finally seeing a reversal of all these many decades of willful ignorance about how our taxpayer dollars are frittered away.
Look, those protesters in the Democrat Party, really what they're doing is they're defending fraud, waste, and abuse. And that's so when you see an anti-DOGE protester, they're not protest. They're protesting to perpetuate government fraud, waste, and abuse. And these people, whether it's Elon Musk or President Trump, they're not cutting programs. They're cutting fraud and abuse of programs, which strengthens the programs. They're not cutting Social Security. They're cutting the fraud out of Social Security, which makes Social Security stronger. They're not cutting the Department of Education. They're cutting the nonsense out of it. The Department of Education is going to continue with its legally mandated functions, Pell Grants, student loans, the IDEA program, which helps local handicapped students, exceptional students, all that. I can assure you of this. They're going to let go 2,100 people because I can do that math, and no one's going to miss them. No one, there will be no net effect of letting go half of the federal workforce. They're just there perpetuating their own existence.
And that'll be 2,100 fewer Democrat voters in Northern Virginia.
Right. So we have a chance to turn
suburban Maryland.
Yeah. Right. We have a chance of turning Virginia Republican again when all those radical leftists, because like 97% of federal employees in the D.C. area vote for Democrats. Right. So they're going to self-deport back to, you know, New England or wherever they came from. So, you know, this demographic shift could change the power balance in Virginia. That's government efficiency and maintaining the viability of programs is not why these people are out protesting against Doge.
Yeah. And you know, wouldn't it be nice if some of these raving lunatics like this woman we heard from in Raleigh, you know, wouldn't it be nice if she took a moment to think about the ramifications of not reforming Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare so that her children and grandchildren may have access to these programs in the future? Because if they go unreformed, they will implode. They will not exist in the future.
Correct.
And that's the whole point.
It's unsustainable.
Totally unsustainable. And that's the point of putting it under the microscope and taking the scalpel, not the sledgehammer, and making the cuts and finding the fraud and abuse and trying to sustain, especially Social Security, into the future by ending the practice of sending checks to people who have been dead for 20 and 30 years. I'd like to say I don't want my great-grandfather receiving one more Social Security check.
Right.
I've had it.
Yes.
I've had it with that. And by the way,
no more Civil War veterans getting VA checks.
Right. And by the way, we can kind of close the circle with examining how government reform going forward since the inauguration of Donald Trump nearly 2 months ago now, believe it or not. We can see how that affects real life, and we can see how, again, the people in government and in these entrenched Democrats will use any crisis to forward their agendas. There was a story last week that initially the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development had rejected a bid by the city of Asheville requesting funding for a recovery plan. And at first people thought, well, how can you do that? How can you reject requests for relief for the people of the city of Asheville who've suffered as a result of this terrible flooding? It sounds like like HUD was acting very abruptly and very unfairly to turn their backs on these poor people. But why did HUD reject the plan and ask them to go back and redraft it? Because while HUD looks forward to helping thousands of North Carolinians, according to Secretary Scott Turner, the Asheville Draft Action Plan incorporated diversity, equity, and inclusion criteria to prioritize some impacted residents over others, which was unacceptable. Yes, it is unacceptable. So here they are playing their DEI games, right, even when it comes to providing relief to its citizens.
Right. They are placing the Asheville, right? Yeah, the Asheville City Council is placing ideology above getting aid to their people because the President Trump administration was very clear they're not going to fund illegal discrimination against people, which is in violation of their civil rights. So they could have left that stuff out of there, but the Asheville City Council placing ideology over getting relief for their people decided to virtue signal and, you know, their citizens are suffering the results of that. They need to vote in different people in Asheville.
For example, HUD discovered within the Small Business Support Program, which was part of their request for $225 million, within this Small Business Relief Program, the draft proposal said that the city will, quote, prioritize assistance for minority and women-owned businesses within the scoring criteria outlined within policies and procedures. So it's not, well, who needs the relief, whose businesses need immediate relief so they can get back on their feet. It's which businesses are minority and women owned.
Right.
That's
right.
Totally unacceptable.
That is completely against the foundation of this country. That's the entire problem with these illegal discriminatory DEI programs is, you know, judge not people by the, you know, color of their skin, judge them by the content of their character, judge them by the content of their resume, judge them by the content of the strength of their application, not insignificant things such as, or superficial things such as gender or skin color or religion.
Correct.
Merit. We need merit.
Grin and bear it. Give us merit. Yeah, yes. Exactly. I just made that up. Pretty good.
Very clever.
Let's shift away from Western North Carolina, which are never far from our thoughts and prayers, of course, but let's shift back to Moore County, shall we? In the past week, there was a meeting of the Moore County Board of Education, don't you know? And David Hensley, I believe you were in attendance as a member of that board.
I was,
and,
yes,
sir. I believe we had a full board attendance for a change, didn't we, for this meeting?
Steve Johnson was dialed in. He is. He was on a pre-planned trip.
Okay, so we had.
So he dialed in. Yes, but yes, all seven were attendance,
including some of our newly elected board members. One of the topics that was undertaken, a very time-sensitive topic, and one that I think again we're just starting to sort of crystallize our understanding of it, is the innovative high school proposal, which dates back to, I guess, last year when $25 million was granted from the state legislature to Moore County, specifically to Moore County schools, to eventually construct a innovative high school on the campus of Sand Hills Community College, which Sand Hills Community College heartily endorsed at the time.
They didn't just heartily endorse, to clearly demonstrate that the good old boy crony network was behind this. Like, within a couple weeks of this surprise announcement, Sand Hills Community College wheeled out a complete site plan that had like an innovative college and an amphitheater and a pond and all this stuff. So they clearly had been scheming behind the scenes.
I was in favor of a food truck court while they were at it, but that didn't get...
Well, don't think that the amphitheater and who's going to pay for that is not related to doubling the occupancy tax.
But the other... So there was a rather large string attached to this $25 million. In fact, it was more like a rope, a large dock rope, really, which was that the school had to launch ASAP. And so what that means is that the school, the Innovative High School, will actually come into existence next year with a small number of students, I think 20 students.
70 students.
Okay, 70 students.
The first cohort will be 70 students.
And they will use unoccupied classroom space in one of the buildings on the Sand Hills campus, one of the existing buildings. And while they try to figure out, here's the big wild card, how are we going to pay for the actual construction of the school, which is going to be far exceeding the $25 million in seed money that we now have. And while we're at it, we now have to give the school a name, and it's, of course, it needs a mascot, because
we have all that now.
After
that was
all,
voted on.
And
the
principal.
Red Wolves.
It has a principal.
We have a principal.
And
but we still can't tell anybody in Moore County how much it's going to cost. The school board, over my objection, has consistently voted for the innovative high school. In fact, in spite of the fact, to this day, no one can say how much it's going to cost the taxpayer. They're just merrily going down. There's a lot of misinformation about this. First is the North Carolina General Statute that spells this out. There is no requirement for it to be co-located with the community college. It could have been co-located with one of our high schools, just out of we got a waiver. Secondly, the funds do not expire. There is not a requirement in the legislation to launch this immediately. That's being driven by these invisible hands that seem to be controlling this. That urgency to launch immediately, that's coming from, like, no one can say who it's coming from, but it's not coming from the legislation.
Well, it seems to be... if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Senator Tom McInnes...
someone's driving it, but the invisible hand who schemed this whole thing is driving the hurried timeline.
I guess what happened was there was a a suggestion that they adopt an aggressive timeline, which became misinterpreted as essentially a mandate to do so. And so here we are. But there's really, you know, theoretically and in general concept, there's nothing really wrong with the idea of an innovative high school, which will target vocational minded students, those who
it's difficult to say who it targets, because by state law it targets three groups of people. It targets people who historically it's people who are high risk of dropping out of high school, people whose parents didn't go to college, and people who would benefit from an accelerated high school. Those are three different disparate groups. And then out of those three groups, it provides three pathways. One is a vocational pathway. Two is graduating at 4 years with an associate's degree. And the fourth way is prepare you for college. But here's the kick in the pants. That's what all of our high schools do day in and day out. My frustration about this isn't the concept, right? My frustration about this, which I've been very consistent in voicing, this was driven by no more than five people in this county who, we'll just call them cronies, who schemed in a proverbial smoke-filled room to build this exact facility at Sand Hills Community College. They did not consult the county commissioners. They did not consult the school board. They didn't even consult the Sand Hills board at large. No more than four or five people decided they're going to do this, when what they should have done is they should have, when they started thinking about it, they should have went to the county commissioner, school board, the public, and said, hey, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And we would have come up with a much better solution. For example, we have to build a new 1,500-seat, you know, $150 million high school, $120 million. We could have taken that $25 million, and we could have used that to build an innovative high school within our new high school, and it would have saved the Moore County taxpayers money. And then instead of bringing 270s, or we could have just taken that money and improved, you know, launched little innovative high schools in all our existing high schools. But now we're going to have this boondoggle facility that no one can say how much it's going to cost or how they're going to pay for it. They're going to raise the money. Okay. The foundation's going to raise the money. Okay, good luck with that. But more importantly, they're going to be busing 270 students from all over the county down here to Sand Hills Community College. We're going to have students spending 4 hours a day on a bus. And there were just better solutions, and there should have been a consultant with the county commissioners and the school board to arrive at a better, more efficient solution.
I can't imagine that there are parents who would be tolerant of 4 hours a day on a bus for their kids either.
Well, there's other problems with it, and the story keeps changing. You know, I ask questions in school board meetings, and we'll get an answer. Then the next week, it's a completely different answer. But, you know, the class schedule is every Friday, they're going to have early dismissal at noon. So our innovative high school, which is going to have an accelerated curriculum, is going to be accomplished by having fewer instructional hours than our normal high school. And they're going to have every Friday afternoon off, so that these innovative high school students, half of which are 14 and 15 years old, so they can go job shadow at vocational jobs when you're 14. And there's no mention as how these 14-year-old students, who no one's going to hire them for job shadowing just because of liability, but getting past that, there's no explanation how these 14-year-olds are going to get to and from their job shadowing when they have every Friday off.
Wow, yeah, that's an excellent point as
well. The problems just keep going. And the reason these problems exist is, rather than working early on to find the ideal solution, four people decided where it was going to be, and everyone else is doing these backflips to accommodate a failed concept.
And oh, just by the way, I can confirm what you're saying about the fact that the members of the Sand Hills Community College Board of Trustees were not in on the early discussions about this, because I'm one of them.
Right, and I'm on the school board, and so we are bearing witness.
How convenient. But right. And you know what was interesting? They finally had a meeting a couple of weeks ago of all the players.
I wasn't invited.
The commissioners, certain members of the county commissioners, certain members of the Board of Trustees.
I wasn't. Were you invited
to
that?
No, I was not. Certain members of the school board.
So what they didn't do is they had this big meeting Friday before last. Sorry to interrupt, but I get agitated over this. They had this big meeting Friday before last where they invited all the media, but who they didn't invite, and they said, we got representatives from the board. They only invited representatives from from the school board and the board of trust and the Sand Hills board. They didn't invite anybody who had a dissenting view. They just invited rubber stampers. It was Robin Calcutt and Shannon Davis who was representing the school board.
But you know what was discussed in that meeting, which came out of really clear blue out of nowhere, was the concept that if the funds cannot be identified to physically build the innovative high school in the immediate future,
yeah,
that now they are talking about building a companion structure on the same footprint as the innovative high school, which would be a vocational training center, which would be run by the community college. And there's actually a summation of the meeting that includes a discussion about how the funds from the state could go first to the vocational training center coming into existence,
innovative high school.
And in case the while the money was being sought for the high school. So they've turned it on its head. It's now not even about getting the high school built as soon as possible. It's about taking our time. But by the way, we can put up this vocational training center, and which is again.
It's
fine to have a new building on the campus, but it's all about the transparency and how you go about it, and how you involve the community and the taxpayer.
Tell me how much it's going to cost.
And tell me how much it's going to cost. And even that, involve the people who are appointed to represent the taxpayer, which is the job, essentially, of a school board member and a college trustee.
The crony establishment wants to do their crony establishment stuff without any input from our elected and appointed boards.
So anyway, we will stay on top of this, as you might imagine.
It's become like an obsession with me. I am now in obsession mode over this.
Well, that's okay as long as you're obsessing about
saving money and delivering value and coming up with efficient solutions that serve both our taxpayers and our students and our parents. Yeah, I'm passionate about that.
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
I know, radical.
By the way,
they should be riled. Well,
by the way, a couple of quickies before we move on to looking ahead to next week, this coming week. In the past week, our Congressman Richard Hudson got himself in some trouble with the New York Times because the Times found out that he had told some of his colleagues in the Congress that maybe they should reconsider holding live town hall meetings in their districts because the meetings were becoming targets of frothing in the mouth lunatic leftists who were not just coming to the meetings to engage in dissenting discussion, but who were coming to the meetings to disrupt, to threaten violence, to threaten the elected officials who, as we have seen, will not hesitate to throw a brick or vandalize a building.
Or a Molotov cocktail.
Or whatever it takes. So Hudson apparently advised some of his colleagues that they might want to consider tele-town hall meetings for the security of their constituents. And that, according to the New York Times, means that he's afraid to face his adversaries, which, of course, is absurd. If our adversaries conducted themselves like normal human beings, law-abiding citizens, then we would be happy to have discussions with them in town hall meetings. But when they show up looking like, ninja warriors with their masks and all that we've seen
the
time
Antifa
and again.
Fascists.
Exactly. When they show up that way, we're not going to take the risk of what they might do. It's just not worth it.
So here's, the New York Times stirs their readers up to a frenzy. So they're out hurling Molotov cocktails and setting vehicles on fire and doing all this outrageous stuff. And then to defend themselves, you know, the Republicans say, okay, we're going to have virtual town halls. Then the New York Times attacks them for that. But the local leftists do the same thing here. My Hensley School Board page, I really wanted that to be a place where we could have discussions and really have thoughtful discussions. And they would come and they would post horrible, vile, disgusting stuff. And then I deleted it. And then they went to court and pointed out, as an elected official, I couldn't delete comments. So my only choice was to ban comments on my official page. And that was in reaction to their abhorrent behavior. So then I'm left with no choice because of the way they behave, and I don't allow comments. And then they attack me for not allowing comments. It's exactly the same thing that the New York Times did in this situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's comical. I don't know if you missed this one or not, but this is really good news. Maybe the best news of all from last week. Rosie O'Donnell, the washed up actress and talk show host, has moved to Ireland. Her Trump derangement syndrome was so intense, so unbearable to her, that she uprooted herself from the freest country in the world, the greatest country on earth, and she moved to Ireland. Now, in and of itself, maybe not a terrible choice if you have to move. It's not a bad place. I don't know that she plays a lot of golf. I do know that if Donald Trump's Irish golf resort is vandalized anytime in the future, we'll know where to begin the investigation. With Rosie O over in Ireland now, that's actually a relief to me. And I believe you and I were talking earlier about the fact that so-called late-night comedian Jimmy Kimmel has mentioned that he might look north and consider a Canadian roost in the future.
You know, I am hoping that the dam is breached and that this is just the dam's breach, and all these people who've been promising, not threatening, but promising us, getting our hopes up to leave, you know, if a conservative, I hope this is our dam breaking in a good way. And I hope all these people finally flee. And Rosie O'Donnell's going to fit right into pasty white Ireland land.
Exactly, which I believe has a rather a prolific history of anti-Semitism. So there's that.
You know. Yeah, I mean, she'll fit right in as a Hollywood hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and it occurs to me that if it was okay to use federal funds to fly illegal immigrants from their countries of origin into the U.S. homeland, which is what the Biden regime did, without any doubt, they did that.
Right.
Why not use federal funds to fly celebrities by the plane loads to various foreign countries where they can relocate permanently?
As long as we keep their passport as they depart the plane, I will sign me up for an additional tax.
Remember how there used to be a box on your tax return where you could check to give a dollar?
Presidential campaign fund.
Yeah, I would check the box that said, give a dollar to the celebrity lefty relocation
fund. Yes. Yeah. We should lobby. Speaking of Congressman Hudson, we should send him a note and lobby. We need to get that legislation introduced.
Absolutely. So in the time we have remaining, let's look ahead to the coming week and what we can expect, and maybe some of the things that may be a little bit unexpected or undesirable. But one that I definitely would encourage you to do, with a deadline looming, is some of our friends affiliated with the Rotary Club of Carthage.
Doing God's work up there.
Doing God's work. A very active and growing Rotary Club. They have created a wonderful program whereby citizens can purchase a banner, a lamppost banner, 24 by 36, I think it is. You can purchase one of these things for $125.
Wow, only $125?
Yeah. And what you do is you submit the name of an active duty or veteran member of our armed forces who you wish to honor with a banner. It can be a relative from a bygone era. It can be a recently retired active duty. It can be a person who is currently deployed somewhere on behalf of protecting our freedoms around the world. So to get more information about how you can do that, and they are going to eventually impose a deadline on this so they can get these banners in place ahead of Memorial Day weekend, you need to do nothing more than go to Carthage NC Rotary, Carthage NC, as in North Carolina Rotary, .org. And you can find out more about how you can go ahead and get on the list to be a part of this wonderful outreach.
So, question, this is awesome. So what are they going to do with these banners? I assume they're going to be displayed somewhere.
They're going to be displayed all across Carthage on 30 different lampposts.
Like on the lampposts.
Yes. From Memorial Day all the way through to Labor Day. And then I believe they're going to continue to remove them and put them back up for the foreseeable years to come. And then eventually they'll retire the program. But it's a great concept.
Man, I wonder if, you know, the central office has a Carthage address and I'm a veteran. I wonder if I could just get like 8 or 10 of these and have them sprinkled a light post on in and around the central office with David, PFC David Hensley.
Hey, you know, it's a great idea.
I think the private Hensley United States Marine Corps picture needs to be sprinkled throughout Carthage.
I'm sure you were a dashing young man in uniform.
Well, look, I mean, if Newsom can spend $100,000 to get a bust of it, to secretly get a bust of himself installed in the California, you know, whatever.
Governor Gavin Newsom. Yeah.
Right. I could spend $500 and get 4, you know, banners of me posted around.
Hey, you know, it's your money. Do it.
So go out and buy these banners before I buy them up.
That's right. The
lesson. Demand will be high.
Exactly. In the week ahead, we need to keep an eye on in the state legislature a bill co-sponsored, I believe, by our very own Neil Jackson, Representative Jackson, who represents District 78 and a good chunk of Moore County. This bill, House Bill 244. Will restrict the display of woke banners and flags on government property, such as pride flags, BLM flags, other flags that have no place anywhere near or around government buildings. So keep an eye on the progress of House Bill 244. Just one more nail in the coffin of the woke movement.
I would like to point out that Sand Hills Community College Sand Hills Community College actually passed a policy banning all this a couple years ago.
Yes.
And here is the glorious thing about it is the trustees, you know, this was prior to your and Dr. Beth Ann Pratt's arrival.
It was just on the cusp of that, yes.
Yes, it was right before your arrival. They voted in lockstep, again, a 14-0 vote, because the votes were all before you guys arrived, like literally 5 years. As far as you look back, all the votes were unanimous. They introduced and unanimously passed a policy that banned gay pride flags, BLM flags on the Sand Hills campus. And even the hardest of leftist left, Helen Probst Mills, they were so used to just rubber stamping and voting for everything that came out. Even the hardcore leftist of the Sand Hills trustees voted for that. And then a few days later, when they realized what they voted for, they started backtracking.
Yeah.
But that was just because they're nothing but rubber stampers.
And they also really had no choice because the proliferation of flags was getting out of hand. It wasn't just pride flags. It was everything under every aggrieved.
Look, just get rid of them all, you know. Viewpoint neutrality, have American service and state flags, and that's it.
Every victimized group was vying to get their own banner, and it was getting out of hand. Even for the lefties couldn't handle it.
The light poles were falling over.
So we're going to have to... We're going to sort of end where we began with another reference to Elon Musk. His SpaceX spaceship will be hurling into space in the coming week, presumably, to rescue the stranded astronauts, two of them, who have been up there for 9 months after initially signing up for a one-week visit.
It's like the SS Minnow, the Boeing SS Minnow, right?
So they sign up for a one-week visit to the space station, 250 miles above the Earth. They've been there for 9 months.
And Harris just abandoned them up
there. Just left them there.
Right.
Because the Boeing ship was not deemed safe enough to return them. It did come back on its own without them, and it made it back.
Ironically, it came back okay.
It came back fine. So Elon has agreed to send up one of his SpaceX ships to... finally bring, not only to bring these people back, but to deliver four more who, for reasons I can't understand, have agreed to go to the space station.
Right.
I hope that they take plenty of changes of clothing and snack bars, because it could be a long stay. Although with Elon and the Trump presidency in place, I think we'll bring them
crossed,
home.
Fingers crossed, man. Can you imagine this? Anyway, I don't want to think about it. Anyway, great show, man. Great show, Steve.
Has it come to an end already? Yes. I was just getting warmed up.
No, can you hear the music?
It's beautiful. We're not going to take it anymore, yeah. But we are going to take aim. Thank you for joining us once again, David. Good to see you.
Yes, Steve.
I'm Steve Woodward. Join us again next week, Saturdays at 11 a.m., when we will be taking aim.